Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for January 16th, 2024. And I do believe it is Tuesday. Hi, Dave.
It's true. Hello, Melody. And happy Absolutely Nothing Day.
Yeah, I believe that.
Yeah, well, this special observance was created as a day to provide Americans after the holidays with one national day when they can just sit around without celebrating, observing, or really doing anything.
I think most of us go through the day without.
Do that anyway? Most of our days are nothingness. Well, look, it might be a good day to celebrate nothing at all. And I suppose putting nothing in a glass and setting it on the table might suffice for celebration. Or you might leave your diary page blank every January 16th. Don't mark anything on the calendar. That kind of stuff. Well, it would be interesting to see what would happen if you sent a blank email dated January 16th. How many replies would you get saying there's nothing here? So guess what?
You got
what?
One.
I did just that this morning to Melody. Her response?
Okay.
Well, in a word, nothing. That's all.
What?
That's all. Your response, in a word, nothing.
Yes.
Well,
you're not going
to
tell
completely
them what I
honest,
said, are you?
Yeah, you were. Yeah, no, you actually did text me later. And ask me a question I won't repeat on the air. But it was funny.
Did you laugh at my response?
I did.
Say what? What are you doing, Dave? Well, you know, I can't imagine anyone not responding. If you get something from someone you know and there's nothing there in today, you know, but you know what? It's also a sign of how we communicate anymore.
Yeah, that's the truth.
Should have called you up and said, what are you doing? Sending me something.
Did you mean to email me nothing?
Yeah.
As a matter of fact.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go on to something.
All right. That's a deal.
Is that a deal? Well, let's go on to gold. Little pressure on gold today. The dollar is a little bit stronger today. The 10-year, the yields have risen today, which we're going to talk about Fed's Waller comments today, his remarks. So gold was down $20 at 2032. Silver was down 1% to 23.08. Platinum was down $16 at 905, and palladium was down almost 4% at $940. It was down 38. And the U.S. markets, the Dow was down less than 1%, 231 points. The S&P was down 17 points. The NASDAQ was down 28. European markets, they were all negative across the board, but, you know, all down less than a half a percent. Asia, the Shanghai was stronger, but I mean, you know, their markets barely move. You know, they range from 2,800 to 3,100, you know, and that's been like that for years. 10-year yield, 4.066. And let's take a look at oil. Crude oil was down 72 cents at 71.96. $72 for that. Natural gas was down 48 cents at 2.833. Wow, 15%. I bet those who shorted that love that deal. Mm-hmm. That's all they're doing with natural gas. They're just running it up, shorting it. So if you're into that type of trading, there you go. You should make some pretty good money on that. But and that's not investment advice, folks. That's just my opinion as I see it. And am I doing it? No, I am not. So there we have it. And, you know, I mentioned we talk about that old Fed guy and his two cents, Fed Governor Chris Waller. He says that this morning that interest rate cuts are likely this year, but said the Fed can take its time relaxing monetary policy. And his comments sort of seem to counter the broad market expectations for aggressive easing this year. The only way they're going to have aggressive easing is if the paper markets are falling out of bed over themselves. It's the only way they're going to have aggressive easing. And because inflation is here. Inflation isn't going away. Is it going to rebound to what it was? Maybe, maybe not. But it's going to stay elevated. It all depends on how you view it. And so are they going to lower? Perhaps. He thinks they are. Waller told the Brookings Institution, as long as inflation doesn't rebound and stay elevated, he believes the OMC will be able to lower the target range. When the time is right, and what is the time? When is the time to lower the rates? Yeah, when the paper markets are falling out of bed, that's when they're going to do it. But everyone, overly optimistic traders, certainly they have ramped up expectations for 2024. But the one thing that is a little different than 2024, this isn't an election year. And, you know, there's a lot of manipulations with markets and economies and so forth during the election years. Who knows what they can do to keep the incumbents in office. So that's how I see election years, Dave.
Or for a quasi-independent board entity like the Fed is supposed to be, who knows?
They're not.
Could work to remove the incumbent from office. So who knows? Who knows? We do know that future traders still see a 63% chance of a Fed rate cut in March, which is actually down 8 percentage points from 71% where it was earlier today. Still overly optimistic in our humble opinion. What's more, traders now think there could be as many as 7 25 basis point cuts the Fed makes this year. I think that's crazy. I mean, who knows? I mean, this whole setup is crazy, you can argue. That optimism, all despite the Fed saying in December that three cuts were likely this year. But time will tell. We'll see in time. Now, in making a pitch for rate cuts, Waller did note the progress made against inflation that's come not at the cost of the labor market that was feared by most experts, in fact. He said, for a macroeconomist, the economy is almost as good as it gets. Well, that's interesting. But will it last? That's again Waller. His answer, well, time will tell whether inflation can be sustained on its recent path and allow us to conclude that we have achieved the price stability goal. The Fed has wrestled with the quandary of not tightening and certainly enough and allowing inflation to expand and tightening too much that it chokes off growth. Waller said those risks are becoming more balanced as time goes on. In fact, he said as the level of job openings compared to the size of the labor force declines, the Fed is now running more of a risk of doing too much. Go figure.
Yeah. Go figure. Well, you know, I think everybody knows I'm no big fan of the IMF or the World Economic Forum that's going on in Davos. You know, everybody complains about there's no trickle down and everything. So you can blame, you know, if you want to look to why there's no trickle down, you can just go to these bedrock foundations and you can see why. And but anyway, they're out there and they're saying that about three quarters of the effects for this tighter monetary policy have already fed through to the U.S. economy. So we got another quarter of it to feed through. And I don't know where that all leads. There's more transmission still to be fed through the euro area, certainly where interest rate hikes started later. This is all through the IMF's deputy managing director, Gitka Gopinath. She says there's been a lot of resilience in the economy despite the rate hikes that we have seen. Yeah, it's all based on debt, but they love debt. They want people to be in debt. I don't. Anyway, it's you know, it's just what do you do? I mean, when you're a global, I mean, you know, I would like to think that there would be some independent global agencies that, you know, would do things right, but so far I don't think we've actually seen it. When you see who all controls the IMF and Davos and so forth, it's the big multinational corporations that everybody seems to applaud most of the time. So I don't get it, Dave.
Yeah, I'll talk more about that in the third segment. It's a big eye opener, in fact, and does give you pause to wonder. I mean, then you got Gopinath who's saying, you know, what is universally true is that we have households and corporations with stronger balance sheets. I'm not sure you want to tell the mega banks in the U.S. that right now after some of the fourth quarter reports coming out. But Francois Villeroy de Galhal, governor of France's central bank, noted on this same panel that there are two lags in transmission, that is, of the effects of central bank monetary policy on economies, from monetary policy decisions to financial conditions, and from financial conditions to the real economy. And he said about the first lag, I think that transmission is over, more or less. In Europe, what is key is the transmission through banks, because the bank credit channel is about two-thirds or three-quarters in Europe, much more than in the U.S. Little technical there, but I think the point is that is really unspoken in this particular article is that the lag effects of monetary policy, whether tightening or loosening, is still in progress. Thus, I think you know, all this talk among Fed members that it's not yet time to talk about rate cuts.
Well, you know, at good old Davos, you got Zelensky over there begging for money. he kind of cracks me up. He just goes everywhere begging for money. And, you know, I read where he was trying to come up with some sort of a plan for peace, I guess, with Russia, but it's something that's Russia already declined. So, I mean, it's like, why would you continue to go after something that it's already been not negotiable? So I don't know. So he's over there talking over at Davos, begging for more money. And you have Blinken over there, the U.S. Secretary of State, Blinken. He's over there wanting Congress to make sure that they get the supplemental funding that Biden's asking for Zelensky. And I mean, they can have the funding for it. All they have to do is agree to some of the terms. So I don't know what the deal is. Saudi Arabia. Now, this is the eye opener. This is an eye opener. Saudi Arabia is targeting more than $3 trillion in investment. $3 trillion. North. So you can probably think of $4 and $5 trillion of investment. Gross capital formation through the National Investment Strategy Supporting Vision 2030. At least $1.8 trillion will be translated into different types of contracts. Not exactly sure what those contracts are going to be and where they're going. He says it's going to create private sector jobs and diversify its economy away from oil. Well, and it's interesting because Saudi Arabia's population, more than 60%, are under the age of 30. Compare that with all of the other countries like ours and Europe and Japan, even China. Everybody's got an aging population. But yeah. That's amazing, 60%.
Yeah, I think Bin Salman sees the writing on the wall there and is looking to take that country in a different direction. But after centuries of familial tradition, it's going to be easier said than done, I think. I mean, then you have Maurice Levy, who chairs the Publicy Group. I don't know if that's French or from France. He told a CNBC panel that artificial intelligence will be more transformational than the mobile phone. He said AI will be everywhere and we have to adapt to it. And we have to adopt it. We have to be trained how to use it. Now, he says that people don't need to become specialists in AI per se, but we do need to become specialists in using it. So, he continues, it's not something that we should be afraid of, even if there will be a few years where the adaptation of AI may create some job destruction. But all in all, AI will be a good thing for humanity. Well, that
remains
for sure
to be seen, yeah.
Remains to be seen.
I mean, how can it be good for humanity? It's good for business, you know?
Yeah.
But that's it. But, and you know, AI, I mean, there's videos now you see online. You know it's not real, but you're not 100% sure.
Well, it's coming. I mean, you got Microsoft over at Davos late rolled out a new subscription for AI services. That's going to include the ability to create these custom chatbots. The move will allow access to the tools of the future that Microsoft has previously reserved for, well, larger businesses. This $20 per month Copilot Pro subscription includes access to Copilot in Microsoft Office apps like Word, Excel, PowerPoint, etc. And custom chatbots, which Microsoft calls Copilot GPTs, are, in its words, coming soon.
Make it kinder and easier on your ears so everybody accepts it.
Yeah, kinder, but not necessarily gentler. I'll have one more smaller piece about the forum in today's third segment.
I hear the music. We're at the end of our first break. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary today. Yes, I think I've already said that. I got distracted during the break as, you know, Butch always tells you listeners what we do during the breaks and so forth. Well, Dave was telling us jokes today. So I got a little distracted. And
Glad to have been of service.
Yes, I needed a distraction today, so thank you. But I need to get my brain back to work. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for the weekly newsletter and blog that is produced and edited by our very own Dave Allen. So thank you. And you wanted to talk about finishing up about this AI.
That's okay. I'm good if you are.
Okay. Well, you know, here Congress announces a deal on child and business tax credits. This is a bipartisan deal to expand the child tax credits and provide a series of tax breaks for businesses. Now, this agreement was between the House Ways and Means Chair Jason Smith and Senate Finance Chair Ron Wyden. Caps months of this negotiating and pursuing common ground in the course. I don't know if it's hotly divided Congress. I think it's lazy Congress, flat out lazy, but I guess that could be create a division. I just think they're flat out lazy. But American families will benefit from this agreement. Hey, get this. This would also lift the tax credit $1,600 refundable cap and, of course, adjust it for inflation. I didn't think we had inflation. I thought inflation was going down. So who benefits? 15 million kids from low-income families are going to be better off as a result of this plan. So, Dave?
Well, you might recall that the D's had demanded a larger child tax credit after an earlier version they passed for less than a year expired at the latter end of the pandemic, causing child poverty to significantly fall and then rise again after it lapsed. Well, the new agreement would provide smaller benefits than the previous monthly payments. And at the same time, the R's were motivated to revive some of the expired portions of the 2017 tax cuts for businesses. So this part of the deal includes expensing for research and experimental costs, the restoration of an earlier interest deduction, an expansion of small business expensing, and an extension of bonus depreciation, which will be a big one if this thing passes. Now, Wyden says he hopes to pass the deal by the beginning of tax filing season, which is January 29th, given the fact that they're now talking about a potential shutdown because of a lack of a deal on the budget. I think that's questionable. But if a deal would pass, it would be a rare success story, Melody, of active legislating by a divided Congress that has otherwise been oh so unproductive. Maybe lazy is the operative word.
So they're just writing checks. They're getting monthly checks.
Well, that I don't know. I haven't seen the legislation. I don't know if it's going to be monthly or if it will just be an increase in the tax credit at tax filing time from that end of it. Certainly that would be what happens on the business side of it taxes, tax forms are
business side,
out.
Yes, but I'm talking about the child.
I don't know. I don't know if it's back to that special monthly payment. I'm reading it as just an increase in the refundable credit, which would come at tax filing time. But more info to come, as they say.
You know, this is really incredible. I just don't understand how this was completed. You know, they show all these pictures of the tunnel network under the Gaza Strip. And they said they discovered one that was wide enough to drive a car inside. Another one stretched nearly 3 football fields long underneath the hospital. We've seen that one. And there was a spiral staircase leading to a tunnel almost 7 stories deep. I mean, how do you do that?
Yeah.
I mean,
A lot of time, a lot of labor, a lot of fanaticism. That's an incredible revelation. I mean, we knew it was going on, just not sure how many of us knew to what extent.
But, you know, I don't understand why they couldn't know to what extent. You know, it's just to me, I guess I just don't, things just don't make sense sometimes. I'm not doubting, you know, the tunnels, but I'm also curious as to, I mean, the buildings that they have built, I mean, they're not the best built structures. I mean, even when you go into areas with mines, I mean, they collapse. I mean, I don't know. It's just, I mean, I've seen pictures of, I mean, heck, I feel safer going through their tunnels than I would some of these tunnels built in the United States under the mountains and so forth. You know, I mean, it's incredible. So
Yeah, time, and I think the ability to do it out of the eyes of drones and satellites made this possible. I mean, to the extent it's true, I don't doubt the veracity, and I believe in just knowing some of or having heard or read about some of the tunneling in other nations that were built and used by ISIS and other groups that Hamas has taken it and run. The thing that gets me is the Israeli military believes there are a lot more tunnels under Gaza. I mean, they're estimating between 350 and 450 miles of tunnels with over 5,700 shafts, separate shafts, leading down to them. That's amazing. That's in a 25 square mile piece of land, the strip.
My question is, is Israel supposed to have the best intelligence in the world? So either they don't have as good of intelligence of what they've always led everybody to believe, or,
I think that's likely. Yeah. I think it's probably all countries, major countries, but it's particularly, I'm not surprised that, or I wouldn't be surprised by, in this case, Israeli intelligence having underestimated the ability of what I'm sure was perceived by them as, a fairly unsophisticated, disorganized band of terrorists. But as we're learning now, the Hamas and Hezbollah, they've been getting literally billions of dollars over the years funneled to them through money laundering, offshore shell companies, et cetera, that have been difficult to follow. Or if they have been followed, who knows?
We've given billions to Iran, given. it's just so.
Yeah, it's disenchanting to say the least.
But it's just staggering, and there's a lot of questions, but
legitimately so, I might say.
Well, 6 out of 158 U.S. CEOs said they'll prioritize bringing workers back to the office full time in 2024. It's like, aren't they done fighting this story,
It appears so.
Executives are apparently resigning themselves to a world where employees don't come in every day as mixing work from home and in the office become the norm for knowledge and other white-collar workers. What I don't understand is if you're a CEO of a company, I don't get it. You work for me. You come to the office or go find another job. Isn't it that simple?
No, far from it.
Well, it should be.
Not anymore. Well, it should be maybe, but we don't live in that world anymore.
And if it's because of wages, then that's what increases wages. It forces them to pay more to keep the employee, but the employee have to follow the rules. Trying to get these multi-corporations to trickle down is not going to work. So, fire their little butts. Increase your wages. And you don't have to give away benefits. You don't have to have 24-hour child care and you know, 8 months of pregnancy leave and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's just, anyway, silly me. I guess I'm from the old school, Dave.
Sounds like it to me, Mother Hen.
But it's logical and it works. But it's logic. It's common sense. Just common sense.
Yeah.
Or it just goes to show that our schools are lacking in teaching what is needed if for the new world for these corporations. So there's a lot of areas where this United States is failing miserably. But anyway.
Well, all I know is that since the pandemic, many employees got used to the idea of working at home. And, you know, if you want to go placing blame, there's a lot of it certainly to go around. I mean, certainly the forced shutdown of nations, of most of nations, didn't make it easy for the heads of companies and organizations to manage their people. Whether we like it or not, it looks as though a lot of employees got used to working from home in their PJs.
That's real productive.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I was sort of a results-oriented guy, and I guess, you know, if you showed me on an ongoing basis, you know, it's not a matter of what have you done for me lately. It's, you know, what do you do for me each and every day? You know, if they found such a slacking off of productivity and. I mean, productivity, interestingly, is measured by the government anyway, and by many large businesses is up.
The key word there is measured by the government.
Well, and businesses themselves, though, Melody. I mean, the productivity is up a little. And so I don't know. I mean, I'm certainly not arguing for or against remote work. I think, you know, a hybrid approach looks as though I'm not sure it's going to become the new normal, but it's certainly trending in that direction. But, I mean, it's just been a few years. Although I will say, I mean, you know, I mean, New York City, for example, I mean, there are examples all over the country now, but, We're seeing a lot of old office, vacant office space in big cities now being converted because of this move. So I say on the one hand, well, you know, it's still an early trend. We don't know if this is going to be like this forever. Well, you know, you start taking Class A and B office space and converting it to apartments and urgent care centers, then, you know, it's going to be a lot more expensive to go back to it. Right? To build new offices.
Well, you know, working from home, the question is, are these employees who are insisting that they remain in the home to work, are they just really eventually going to be losing their jobs? It's, you know, they'll just be replaced with AI and so forth. But they can't see into the future far enough because it's generations of where it's just immediate now. They don't look too far into the future.
Yeah.
But also,
Go ahead.
But also with these vacant office buildings being converted, yeah, New York needs them to house the illegal immigrants. They have to, you know. So, yeah, that's coming at a prime time. This just started in August, you know, where they started to do these applications and so forth. 46 buildings kicked off in August. Yeah, they need housing. You know, when they take away hotels and things like that. Yeah, they need to someplace to put these people. So, well, is it right? Now they're going to, now these office buildings will be getting help from the city, the taxpayers, to convert these buildings. Even after the citizens are paying to support the people. I don't know, Dave.
I don't like that necessarily. I mean, one thing.
What's gonna happen?
If it's going to house the homeless. The domestically raised homeless. Oh, we're out of time.
We're out of time. We'll be right back.
Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody off this final segment, taking care of other client business. You know where to get her. 1-800-375-4188. Well, most media sites that I've been reading or looking at today are calling yesterday's election outcome in Iowa as a perfect 10 for Donald Trump. Here are a couple of takeaways. First, they say he couldn't have scripted it any better. Trump apparently won 98 out of 99 counties in the state, dominating virtually every demographic, while physically campaigning in the state far less than any of his top rivals. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis edged former U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley for a distant second, still giving both an incentive to stay in the race and further divide voters looking for a Trump alternative. Now, Vivek Ramsey, Ramaswamy, who had sought to brand himself as the MAGA movement's heir apparent, or Donald Trump's vice presidential pick, suspended his campaign after a distant fourth place finish. I think he got a little over 7% of the vote, and he quickly endorsed Trump. Now, Trump was in rare form early in his victory speech, urging the party to come together behind him and actually complimenting DeSantis, Haley, and Ramaswamy without the usual insults. Meanwhile, DeSantis cried election interference. His campaign staff and allies spent much of last night attacking the media for calling the race for Trump, even before some caucus goers had even cast their votes. I think it was first called 30 minutes after the caucus is convened. DeSantis campaign spokesperson Andrew Romeo said the media is in the tank for Trump, and this is the most egregious example yet. Still, DeSantis, who predicted 6 weeks ago that he would win Iowa, celebrated his 30-point loss and declared on stage that we got our ticket punched out of Iowa. Okay, if you say so, Ron. And Nikki Haley's path now narrows, too. Haley was counting on a second-place finish to knock DeSantis out of the race and set the stage for a stunning upset in independent-minded New Hampshire, where polls show she's within striking distance of Trump. I think I saw today the latest poll there, one of them anyway, showed Trump beating her right now, 39% to 32% of probable voters. But Haley's momentum from recent debates failed to translate to a surge in Iowa. Her strategy of mining anti-Trump and moderate votes in the suburbs there fell far short. And her claim last night that the GOP nomination battle was now a two-person race didn't quite land with the force she was hoping for and failed to equate with the actual voting results. Haley stopped Trump from sweeping all 99 counties by a margin of just one vote in Johnson County, which is home to the University of Iowa. I have one more takeaway from last night's results. Trump's so-called victory was based on an anachronistic voting system whose time, I believe, has long come and gone. The Iowa caucus turnout represented a mere 14% of all registered Republican voters. And that's dismal and doesn't necessarily reflect the will of the state's voting populace. With the dangerously frigid weather and many Iowa neighborhoods still snowed in from recent storms, an election with actual in-person voting, mail-in voting, could produce a much larger turnout in future elections, and a result that gives the state's citizens more confidence in the outcome. Well, one other quick thing today about the World Economic Forum in Davos. White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan delivered a speech there today and laid out the administration's approach to the wars in Gaza and Ukraine, as well as the U.S.-China competition. Now, Sullivan's speech comes as the White House seems to be struggling to make progress in two wars where it's highly invested. In Gaza, President Biden's becoming more and more frustrated with the Israelis' government policy and with Benjamin Netanyahu, its prime minister. In Ukraine, the administration still hasn't been able to get a deal with Congress to fund additional military aid, which could leave an opening for Russia, some foreign policy observers say. Now, on the war, Sullivan argued that the U.S. and like-minded partners are determined to show that the aggressions will fail and tough-minded diplomacy can exceed. We will see. Well, look, I have a piece in our latest American Survival newsletter on this week's World Economic Forum. Global elites from around the world have convened in wintry Davos, Switzerland to discuss the countless issues facing nations, their citizens, and pocketbooks. Well, as they meet this week at the annual meeting of the World Economic Forum over cocktails, cigars, and caviar, chances are they'll return to their homes by next weekend without having come together on a unified plan to address even the most existential threats facing the planet. Widespread war and violence, poverty and hunger, and perhaps the biggest and most challenging of them, the global climate, whatever the cause of its warming. Beyond those dangers, or more importantly, what's possibly behind them, lies a widening gap between the wealthiest of citizens and everybody else, and the growing uncertainty of how artificial intelligence could be used to, well, make things better or make things worse. But first, a brief refresher on the organization and its annual event. As Gail LeGrand points out, the annual forum has become so famous in mainstream circles that WEF and Davos have pretty much become synonymous. The resort town that's nestled among the Swiss Alps' majestic snow-capped peaks usually hosts enthusiastic skiers and hikers this time of year. But for 1 week early each year, the WEF invites world leaders of all ilks, corporate heads, billionaires, academics, journalists, and others, get together to talk about the world's most pressing challenges. Excuse me. Now, after the meetings and parties adjourn, WEF packs up and returns to its headquarters over 250 miles away in the Geneva suburbs, where the nonprofit houses 600 of its 800 plus employees. On its website, on its website, which is weforum.com, the World Economic Forum, which was founded in 1971, says its mission is improving the state of the world. It says it believes that progress happens by bringing people together from all walks of life who have the drive and the influence to make positive change. Our activities, it goes on, are shaped by a culture founded on the stakeholder theory that an organization is accountable to all parts of society. Well, its so-called strategic partners, as I alluded to the first segment, include no less than 119 multinational corporations and other international nonprofit organizations, including too-big-to-fail banks, mega accounting firms, big oil, big pharma, and other multinational corporations. Well, whatever. The theme of this year's meeting, the 54th, is rebuilding trust. Aptly, I believe. WEF says Davos 2024 is meant to restore collective agency and reinforce the fundamental principles of transparency, consistency, and accountability among leaders. Their president, Borge Brende, said, at a time when global challenges require urgent solutions, innovative public-private collaboration is necessary to convert ideas into action. This week's annual meeting will serve as an accelerator of cooperation, deepening connections between leaders and between initiatives. Let's hope so. So he concludes, the question for leaders at Davos 2024 is, will the coming year be a period of perma-crisis, or will it be time for resolution, resilience, and recovery? Important questions. The two issues that attendees will hopefully come away from the meeting with a deeper understanding of and how to address are underlying risks posed by artificial intelligence and wealth inequality. Yesterday, the IMF warned that roughly 40% of all jobs around the world could be impacted by the rise of AI. It warned that high-income economies like the U.S. face greater risks than emerging markets and low-income countries. I think the IMF found that in most cases, the technology is likely to worsen overall inequality in the job market. IMF head Kristalina Georgieva urged policymakers to address this troubling trend and to take proactive steps to prevent the technology from further stoking social tensions. She said, we are on the brink of a technological revolution that could jumpstart productivity, boost global growth, and raise incomes around the world, yet it could also replace jobs and deepen inequality. The IMF notes that about 60% of jobs could be impacted by AI in high-income nations like the U.S., with about half of these benefiting from AI to improve productivity. On the other end, Sam Meredith reports, AI exposure is estimated to come in at 40% in emerging markets and 26% in low-income countries. Meredith adds, the IMF notes that many of these lower-income nations don't have the infrastructure of skilled workers to harness the immediate benefit of AI, raising the risk that the tech could indeed worsen inequality. The IMF also warns that AI could affect income and wealth inequality within countries, warning of polarization within income brackets. It said workers, of course, most of them higher income individuals who were able to access the benefits of AI could increase their productivity and salary, while those who can't risk falling further behind. And as Melody and I discussed on the Financial Survival Radio Show, Too Big to Fail, Goldman Sachs previously warned that generative AI could impact as many as 300 million jobs worldwide. That's a lot. It also acknowledged that it could stimulate labor productivity and growth and eventually boost GDP by as much as 7% over time. Well, speaking of inequality, Jenny Reed reported yesterday the ignoble news that the world's five richest men have more than doubled their already incredible wealth since 2020. That's according to a new Oxfam report as the charity calls for curbs on corporate power. Oxfam website says it's a global community of people who believe we can overcome poverty by fighting the injustices and inequalities that fuel it. The Oxfam report found that the combined fortune of the world's wealthiest people has surged from $405 billion in March 2020, the early days of the pandemic, to $869 billion in November 2023. Now, notably, none of those five, Tesla CEO Elon Musk, LVMH boss Bernard Arnault and his family, Amazon founder Jeff Bezos, Oracle founder Larry Ellison, and veteran investor Warren Buffett, none of them are expected to attend Davos this week. The report also found that seven of the world's 10 biggest companies have a billionaire as their CEO or main shareholder. So as the world's wealthiest 1% own 43% of global financial assets, according to Oxfam, like stocks and bonds, along with stakes and privately held businesses, it warns if current trends continue, the world will have its first trillionaire within a decade, yet poverty won't be eradicated for another 229 years. Now, Oxfam is calling on governments everywhere to reduce the gap between the ultra-rich and the rest of society by reining in corporate power, including by breaking up monopolies, capping CEO pay, and adding new taxes on permanent wealth and excess profits. Yes, it's a controversial proposal, certainly unlikely to gain any footing in the U.S. And in other Western democracies right now with all the divisive political infighting. But I'm afraid they've become necessary actions, some would say evils, especially with the dubious outcomes coming with AI, to avoid even more global unrest or worse. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll return on Thursday, which will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks always to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.